This is Mod Love, the show that tackles dating, mating, and relating in the modern world with your host, premier dating mentor and coach, Jody Riley, and her partner from Straight Talk with Steve, Stephen Cardinal. Also featuring Ann Wade, our soulmate expert from soulmatedance.com.
Welcome, everyone. This is Jody Riley with my co-host,
Stephen Cardinal.
And you are listening to Mod Love, modloveradio.com. If you didn't know that's where we were, thanks so much for joining us this week. We have a fantastic show planned for you guys tonight. We're actually playing with some new equipment here tonight.
We do. We have a brand new recorder in here going full digital, not recording to the computer anymore. So
yeah, not using the mixer.
We'll see how that goes, right? No mixer involved at all. So
yeah.
We'll see what happens. Eventually, we need to start getting our documents and stuff that we're reading, our notes, off the computer so that we can actually shut the computer down and get rid of that sound too. But small steps.
Yeah, baby steps. Really like my computer.
Yeah, well, it's not conducive to a good recording studio.
I know, but I like my computer.
It's noisy.
I have a very noisy laptop, I will say that. But thanks, guys, again. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. We have a fantastic show. We're going to be talking a little bit about this phenomenon called the dad bod.
Yeah, we'll just touch on that a little bit and why things like this suddenly seem to pop up and everyone gets excited about it. Then it's probably actually by the time you hear this, it may already be mostly gone off the
It keeps popping up in my news feed. Every time I think it's gone, it pops up again. But we had an interesting conversation about it this weekend on the beach.
Right.
Because, you know, we're looking at all these people on the beach. And so we'll clue you in a little bit on that. And then, of course, for our feature session tonight, we're going to talk a little bit about narcissistic people. And how do you recognize somebody who might be a narcissist? And we're going to talk about what narcissism is, because it's actually a mental health personality disorder, which a lot of people didn't know that, which I assume everybody knows that. But recently I was out at a networking event, and people were talking about who they had been dating and all this kind of stuff. And it came that most people didn't even realize that NPD, narcissistic personality disorder, is actually a disorder in the DSM. So,
and it's not one that they really have any treatment for.
No, there's no treatment
right.
for it.
For a lot of other things, there are either drugs that can help you manage it or some
personality disorders
work
are not
that you
one
can
of those.
Do, but there you go.
Right. But you're not completely lost, and we'll talk a little bit about that too, because there is hope. If you happen to be somebody who is narcissistic or dating somebody, so there is hope. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We're also, since we don't have our soulmate segment tonight, we're going to delve a little bit into relationship rescues. And I found a fantastic article on Psychology Today that talks about four or five things that you can do to kind of get your relationship back on track and kind of rescue it. And then we have Straight Talk. What are you talking about in Straight Talk tonight?
We're going to talk a little bit about I'm trying to frame it as a instant gratification when it comes to seeking punishment of others.
Oh, nice.
So there you go. And we have a listener question tonight, too,
yes,
to talk a little bit about divorce, D-I-V-O-R-C-E.
Which was a horrible song, by
the
way.
Yeah, I know. Going through the big D, I don't mean Dallas. I remember that one from when that year or so that I actually listened to country music.
We'll get you back into it. Charlie and I will indoctrinate you.
I don't think so. It hasn't happened yet.
So I don't know. Have you listened to your playlist on iTunes lately?
There's all sorts of stuff in there. We had some really bad gangster rap going on the other day in there, too, with swearing and cussing and cursing. And
which I just giggle because I know that's not anything you ever listened to.
It just ended up in the – yeah. Anyway, so let's get on with the show. Why don't we? So
why don't we?
Dad bods.
So this came about – I believe by a young girl who posted a blog about an appreciation for the dad bod. And the dad bod kind of is, I would say, just kind of the average middle-aged guy who's kind of let himself go a little bit, maybe got a little bit of a beer gut. He's certainly not really working out to enhance his physique or anything like that. Would you agree with that whole
thing? Yeah, it's a softer body. I work out and I have unreasonable expectations of where I should be as a 48-year-old man, certainly. But looking at the bodies that show up in these things, you know, these are people who are probably 18 to 20% body fat. So you're not going to be seeing ripped abs. You're not going to see any abs at all, really. But they're not all saggy with big old love handles or anything like that. So probably 18%-ish body fat,
which percentage. Means nothing to me.
Well, for those folks who are familiar with doing any kind of bodybuilding or just working out and trying to hit a certain look, you've probably looked at, researched, all right, what fat percentage do I need to be at to be able to, see my abs or to be able to see the striations in my muscles or whatever it is, if you've looked at that. And there's all sorts of websites that have kind of either pictures of different people who have been DEXA checked or used other checks to verify what their body fat percentage is, so that you can kind of use them as a guide of where are you at, and if you have a goal to hit, how far do you have to go? It helps to know how much fat you have to work off to hit a certain look, and realize that it may mean to you, holy cow, that's a lot of work. You know, for a 48-year-old man trying to get from 20, slightly over 20% down to, I'm never going to hit 10%. So I'm never going to have those washboard abs. And then the really ripped guys, which you see.
You don't have a soft appearance to me, though.
Because I don't have muscle. I don't have a lot of muscle. I'm still working on my muscle mass, and I need to build that up, and that'll actually work. But anyway, this isn't about me. This is about the dad bod. And a lot of these people who are identified in this article anyway, from what I'm looking at, I'm guessing they're probably in that 18%-ish range of body fat. And so, yes, she's a student, right? And she's just kind of saying, here's what should be in, here's what she thinks is fine, and gave a bunch of reasons why.
Right. And so you and I were on the beach this weekend, and it was very interesting because we're walking on the beach, and what triggered the conversation was there was this guy, there was a couple that were walking towards us. They were walking in the opposite direction, so we were meeting them. And this guy was ripped.
Oh, yeah. He was a younger guy, ripped. Probably early 20s or so.
Right. But he was not an ounce of fat on him.
Yeah, he was definitely like in the 8 or 9% body fat range.
Large pectoral muscles, large... Yep. What are the shoulder muscles?
His triceps and quads. I mean, just everything. All his shoulders and upper body and everything. He had a good balance and all. Had the ripped belly and everything like
perfect
that.
Perfect V formation.
And obviously, even though I know he's a lot younger and has all the right chemicals in his body to get the most out of that, that is still a heck of a lot of work to not just accomplish it but maintain it. You can't maintain that having a beer a night. I mean, he may have a beer a month if he lets himself do that. He's got to be exceedingly diligent with his diet, with his exercise program, probably spending a couple of hours, maybe not a day, but every other day might be doing 2 hours in the gym, something like that. So this is a guy who's putting in a lot of work.
Right, right. But as we were talking about, is a lot of the people that a lot of these articles on dad bods are talking about are celebrities. And you're saying, and you mentioned this in a straight talk that you did a few months back on – sometimes these guys that are still revered, even though they kind of have the dad bod, is because they were kind of revered when they were younger because they're celebrities. Leonardo DiCaprio. I think one of the articles that was mentioned had Val Kilmer, who he's past dad bod. He's like 30, 40% body fat these days. He's kind of let himself go a little bit. Pierce Brosnan. Mm-hmm. Was another one who is kind of rocking the bod dad these days. But these guys, when they were doing roles.
The dad bod.
These guys in roles that they had in the past had to be ripped, and so they were. And so people probably became fans of them when they were younger and had those roles and were more ripped. And now that they're rocking the dad bod, they're still their fans.
Right.
They're not going to not be fans.
And even
of
though,
them.
So they have this picture. I think that's Leonardo there. Yeah, he's got glasses, but that looks like Leonardo right there. And he's looking soft. He's not looking horrible. I'm not a big fan of the beard and stuff. For all I know, he's prepping for a role there too. And that's the other thing is that, if dad bod Leonardo suddenly gets a role where you need to be ripped, obviously he's going to be getting paid a lot of money. I don't know what he gets paid and all that. But let's say he gets paid $1 million to do some movie. Well, if he knows that he has to be super ripped, before they even start shooting, he's probably going to be spending 6 months working out with a personal trainer, 4 hours a day, designed a diet, the whole nine yards to get there. He's not just going to do it by going to work all day at whatever the rest of us do for our jobs and then try to squeeze in an hour at the gym and and then go home and have dinner with the family and, have
some. But he's going to get paid a lot of money to do that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's all part of the job. That is his job to do that. And the rest of us don't have that kind of luxury. So, but again, he's going to be waffling back and forth. I mean, we've seen other actors who get super scrawny. The guy,
Matthew McConaughey, right? Did it for Dallas Buyers Club. And he is a super fit guy normally. I mean, he's not one of those guys that's uber ripped, mm-hmm. but he's somebody that works out all the time. And so he just always, he's built a lot like you in the fact that he's kind of long and lean. And so he never gets pudgy looking, but he's also not the guy that's like super ripped all the time. He's just kind of above average looking, I would say. Right. He's not average, because I consider dad bod kind of average looking.
Right. It's not an unhealthy look. It's normal. It's a person who has a life to lead. They have kids that they're taking care of, and having to do stuff around the house, and maybe have a desk job and all that other stuff, and they're doing, they keep track of their diet, and they go to the gym a couple times a week and all, just to kind of maintain things. But they're not an athlete. They're not super ripped. They're not. They have a life. These are living, working, normal bodies.
And these are attractive bodies to some people. But that doesn't mean that, and one of the things was men were starting to come out of the woodwork and say, yes, we don't need to work out anymore. You love us pudgy.
And that's not necessarily true. The ones who loved you pudgy loved you before that. And all the rest are not going to have their mind changed by this schoolgirl who writes an article about it. It just gives people a chance to identify with something and try to get a little validation. And I guess it's, that's more worrisome, that we really need that validation
right somewhere.
We need someone to write an article about what we identify with and say that we're the best.
And that's okay. We're validated because that's okay, because everybody likes that.
And so anytime these come out, whether it be the, wasn't it Dove had done
different body heavier, types, all these women, different body types.
So all of a sudden, all these women come out, see, that's beautiful because that's me right there. The people who thought you were beautiful before still think you do. And the ones who don't are not going to be changed by that Dove thing. And trying to seek validation and trying to convince everyone else you need to start loving, being attracted to me more, it's not going to help,
No.
There's a body style and whatnot that I'm attracted to, and there are some that I'm not, and you're not going to change that, and it's my right to be attracted, and I don't even necessarily have control over that.
Right.
But it is my right, just as it's your right to be attracted to what you want.
Right, absolutely. So I think it's actually started an interesting conversation. So we'll kind of monitor it and see how the conversation goes. Because I'm thinking at some point Leonardo is going to have to get ripped again, and he won't be rocking the dad bod.
Exactly. But so guys or women, if you're out there and you're not sporting the bod that some media outlets are telling you that is, a supermodel is a supermodel, and you shouldn't be judging yourself against that person because they have a completely different role in life. And there are guys who are only going to be attracted to them, but there are plenty of guys who are not necessarily attracted. Or they may hold it up as a standard. I love to watch, look at Angelina Jolie all day, but that has no bearing on what else I find attractive or what I'm going to look for in a relationship. So, let her look the way she looks, good, bad, or otherwise. And, just be yourself and trust that there are people out there who will find you and find you attractive as you are.
And you just got to let that happen.
Right.
Yeah. So let's go on and pull up that listener question.
So we have a listener question, and I'll jump right into it. When do you know it's time for divorce? My wife and I can't seem to get on the same track. We've been together 5 years, but things are getting worse. We fight about everything from our daughter to money to what to have for dinner. Even after therapy, we are still falling apart and fighting constantly. Is it time to give this up, or should we go back to therapy and keep trying?
Now, being from the counseling therapy side of things, I always think that in these situations, therapy can be beneficial. However, we don't know anything about this couple. He's just saying that they're fighting. We don't know really the whole story. So we can only give an idea of what we have. What is up with me tonight? I'm like knocking stuff over. We can only go on what we have here.
Right. So I guess the bottom line question, we don't know for this person, but when do you know it's time for a divorce?
One of the things I would say is if you've been together, everybody talks about the 7-year itch. And I think about 5 to 7 years in, a lot of times people get, they start to really, like, those little things that really didn't annoy you before kind of maybe start to annoy you. And sometimes we do kind of start getting a little more irritated with our partner. So anytime you start trying to, you start feeling that around the 5 to 7 year, it's always a good time to kind of check in and make sure that you guys are on the right path. And therapy is a great way to do that. But you want to pick a therapist who is going to kind of explore that with you and not just kind of come in with some agenda. So you might need to try out a couple of therapists. Maybe this therapist that you guys went to isn't really working for you. Maybe you need to try another one. I don't know. Some people have tried out 2 or 3 therapists before they've actually found somebody that really fit with them. You might try a relationship coach as opposed to a therapist. Because with therapy, one of you has to be diagnosed so that it can be billed. So you might maybe need to go to a relationship coach that doesn't have any kind of diagnosis or anything like that. Because sometimes that can get in the way mm-hmm. of actually doing the work as a couple. Having said that, one of the first things you need to do if you go into therapy, and what the therapist should do, is they should basically take a temperature to make sure both of you are on the same page. Are you both there because you want to work on the relationship? Sometimes one person's there to work on the relationship and one person's there thinking it's divorce counseling.
Right.
You got to make sure everybody's on the same page. You're both in here to make this work. Once that's established, then you can kind of start digging into some of the issues that you have. You know, what is it that you're fighting about? You said you're fighting about your daughter. You're fighting about money, I think he said, because yep. I can't see yep. that. So what are these things that you guys are fighting about? And if the fights are about values, then you have to go back and say, okay, well, do we still value the same things? You know, a lot of times when people get married, they forget to talk about some of the stuff coming in the future. They forget to talk about how are we going to parent. Sometimes once the baby's born, you suddenly decide you have very different parenting styles and very different parenting values. That needs to be addressed. And if possible, the two of you need to get on the same track, because if not, you're just going to continue to argue about it and it's not going to do anybody good, any good. When should you get a divorce? I think if one of you has already checked out of the relationship and thinks it's divorce counseling, that's a good indication that you might be headed for divorce court. If you guys can't agree on your values, you know, if one of you is going in one direction with your values, one of you is going in the other direction, whatever those values might be, whether they're financial values, whether they're parenting values, whether it's I want to live in this city, you want to live in that city, whatever. If the two of you cannot come to a compromise on those, you're probably headed for divorce court. And, you know, and at least in my personal divorce that I went through, that was kind of what it was. We weren't really going in the same directions. And I don't know exactly if that was the same case for you, but it came down to a mismatch of values. Now, that's not to say when we got married, we didn't have the same values, but over time, our values changed.
Right. I think you're right. For me, it was, when did I know it was time for a divorce? Probably about a year and a half after I should have known it was time for a divorce, because even when I was going, when we were doing some counseling, really in my head, I knew that I knew deep down that I was done.
You were, yeah, exactly. Your therapist should have found that out to begin with.
And I was
a good therapist would.
And actually, shortly, you know, after only a few sessions, it did become, you know, Steve needs some counseling here. Because of course, that's when I was starting to reopen up the sexual abuse and everything. So we really said, you know what, Steve, you need to work on this. And of course, my wife was like, all right, but when it's time for us to start working back again, I want you to promise that you're going to let me know before you decide that
you want a divorce.
You want a divorce.
Right.
And I said, that's not really possible, because it's like, you know, making sure you turn, you know, a mile before you get to the bridge. You don't know it's a mile before until you actually get to the bridge.
Right.
Then you can't back up, you know. So, and that's how it kind of turned out. So she was not happy that I got to that point of, no, I want a divorce. But really looking back, for easily a year and a half, I knew deep down that, nope, I am done. This is not what I want. This is not what I'm looking for. And unfortunately, it took that long to do it, which unfortunately made it worse. So, I mean, you do have to kind of, you don't want to quit too early. It sounds like these people have done counseling. Hopefully, they've had a good counselor that mm-hmm. they both, you know, respect and can actually communicate with.
And that you feel comfortable with.
Right. But if they have found that and it's still not just working, you know, I hate to tell people to get divorces, but, you know, it happens a lot, and a lot of people can, have wonderful lives afterwards and just try to do it in the most compassionate way. Obviously, you have kids, so you do have to take that into account to make sure that they know they're not to blame for it, that they can't fix the problems between mommy and daddy.
And obviously, in this case, their child probably is young. We don't know that, but even then, even young children sometimes do think, well, did I do something wrong?
And
so she will need some attention as well if you do go the divorce route. But I think you're right. I mean, I think you have to, I would say before you just decide the divorce route, maybe try another therapist.
Right. Try a different one. Especially if, again, you have to decide in your head, do you really want to make it work? Are you just trying to make it work because you don't want to hurt her, or you don't want to admit to your friends that you're going to feel like a failure because your marriage failed or anything like that?
Or you think you're failing your daughter?
Are you really doing it because you really want to make it work with her? Can you still remember the times where things were so good that you'd wanted to marry her in the first place? And do you think you can get back to that feeling of, I want to be married to her? And if you honestly can't say that, then yeah, I think you'd then just need to figure out how to do so in a compassionate way.
And that's compassionately and consciously as possible.
Right.
Well, there you go. So again, we always encourage people to let us know how it goes and let us know what your decision is and what it turns out to be. And with that, we're going to have to go to Straight Talk.
So we'll
what
you do got a quick for straight talk right straight here. Talk.
There's something going round that doesn't let me feel at ease. It's creeping like the plague. It's gonna bring me down to my knees.
So in the past week down here in Charleston, South Carolina, we just had a horrific case of animal abuse. An unknown person at the time had taped up a dog's mouth, left it for 48 hours or so, and caused all sorts of damage to this dog. And of course, it was all over the news, all over social media. Everyone's been all upset about it with good reason. It's a horrific thing that happened that someone decided to do. And today, this morning, they identified that they had arrested somebody and they were going to be arraigned and all that. And immediately there were people posting, all right, I want to be at where, when can I go to the court and pick it out there? Because I need to be out there and let this guy know this and that and the other thing. And to me, I was like, shouldn't we wait to see if this is the right guy? I mean, people go to court all the time and get found innocent. It happens. It's always possible that this is not the right guy. Shouldn't we wait until we've kind of let the information come out and figure out, is this really the person before we go and try to ruin this guy's life? Yes, he's obviously done some wrong things for them to even pull him in. I guess he was on probation or something like that. He was out on bail maybe from some
bail.
Other thing. So, I mean, he's not a perfect human being, but we still don't know for sure unless he's admitted to it, which I have not heard that he has. We have not heard that he is definitely the guy. So we seem to have this, we all get pent up with this anger and very strong emotion that we feel that soon as there's some release for it, we need to let it out and just tear into this person. And we do it with all sorts of different people in society. But in this particular case, it's like, can't we step back and just let's see where it happens. If the guy gets found guilty, or if they find who did it and that person found guilty, there's plenty of time then to talk about, all right, how can we make sure that this guy gets punished as appropriate? And of course, everyone right now is, all right, we need even tougher laws than we have right now. How much tougher? I mean, 5 years, obviously, even if the laws that we had were so worked for keeping people from breaking laws, we wouldn't have laws broken, right? So, they're certainly not necessarily working as a deterrent. So it's really just kind of, figuring out how to get rid of all our anger about what these people do. So anyway, I guess bottom line is this instant gratification of trying to get our anger resolved and take it out on somebody, rather than let's wait until the truth comes out, as much of the truth as we can get, and then figure out, A, how can we learn from that to prevent something like this from happening again? How can we, educate people on better behavior and how to proper treatment of dogs? My guess is this guy, from what I understand, he was probably really ticked off. This dog was barking and barking and barking. He got frustrated and angry, threw some tape on it, and walked off, never really thinking that the damage that tape was going to do. Probably just didn't even think of it at all. But if he did think of it, that dog will eventually just, you know, shake his head and pull his paws and get the darn thing off, not realizing that, no, that tape is way too strong. So even though it was really stupid and mean and all that other stuff, it's not necessarily this long premeditated, I am going to make this dog suffer and have his tongue cut off and all this other stuff. It's just human stupidity, and you still have to punish that. But I think we need to let the information get a chance to come out and be clarified and understand what's going on so we can use it right and direct our anger and our energy in the right way to help our future, to prevent stuff like this from happening again, to, you know, educate people, and to make sure that the punishment that is doled out is appropriate. And that is Straight Talk with Steve. It seems my stupid mouth is gonna get me into trouble again. My charm has set the trap. He's reaching for the shovel, says he's digging my grave. But the more I try to wrestle free.
It's very interesting that you mentioned that, because I actually saw another, even what I would consider almost more horrific way that that happened today on my news feed on Facebook. There was a woman who posted something that a lot of her friends took as a suicide, I'm leaving, something about goodbye, I love you all, or something like that. And all of these people were like, oh my God, she's going to commit suicide. So of course, everybody is freaking out, calling the police, of course, if you think somebody's going to commit suicide,
you should do that.
And I'm assuming that these people knew she was going through a tough time or something. It's not somebody that I knew, but it's somebody that is Facebook friends with me. And then as soon as it was found out that she was okay, somebody posts without knowing, it was just a joke, I can't believe she would do that, blah, 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 blah. And so everybody's like, oh my God, it was a joke. And then there was a couple of people that kept coming in and saying, wait, we don't know if this was a joke. You know, somebody just made the comment, this is a joke, and suddenly people are unfriending her, and how dare you do this, and blah, blah, blah. And I, you know, I don't know what it is. I haven't looked at it in a while. I don't think it was a joke. I think it was simply that she posted something, maybe I'm leaving Facebook or whatever, and people took it as you're committing suicide because she'd been having a tough time. But it was shocking how quickly people turned on her. Without knowing, mm-hmm. Just, you're not dead? Well, oh my God, it must have been a joke. You know, I mean, just absolutely. And it was completely condemning her and almost over-punishing her for something that maybe she didn't even mean to do.
Right.
Everybody jumped to the conclusion that she was committing suicide. Everybody jumped to the conclusion that it was a joke and took offense. And so, but nobody really wanted to listen to those people that kept coming in and saying, wait, we don't know what the whole situation is here. Why are you unfriending her? You don't know what happened. So but you're absolutely right. It's just kind of like immediately convict. It's crazy. So, yeah.
Anyway, great segment. It keeps us busy, though.
Yeah. So anyway, we're going to have to take a quick little break. When we come back, we're going to talk to you about how to recognize a narcissist, especially recognizing them before you get into a relationship with them. So don't go away. You are listening to
Mod Love.
Hi, Jody here from Mod Love. I hope you guys are enjoying the show. I just wanted to remind you all to visit our website at modloveradio.com. You'll notice that on our homepage on the right-hand side, there's a blue box. If you put your information in there, we will send you some free goodies. And while you're there, you can also watch videos, listen to episodes, subscribe to the show, or even check out our gallery of expert guests. You can also search for articles and send us your questions. Again, that web address is modloveradio.com. Thanks so much for tuning in, and thanks for listening to Mod Love. All right, welcome back, everybody. This is Jody Riley with my co-host,
Stephen Cardinal.
And you are listening to
Mod Love.
We are coming to you from Mod Love Radio. So if you have not checked us out online, please do so. You can check out all of our fantastic shows out there. But if you're just joining us, this is our feature segment. And tonight we're going to talk a little bit about narcissism and how do you recognize a narcissist. So as I was mentioning,
I usually just look in the mirror and he's there in the morning.
And that's interesting because what most people think of as a narcissist, and that actually comes from, is it a Greek or a Norse?
Narcissus is Roman or Greek.
Roman or Greek? I don't know.
So many of those things, I think.
I get them confused.
It might be in the Roman stuff, but see, the Romans took a lot of the Greek gods and everything, and even some of their stories, and changed the names. So,
Narcissus was one of the gods of the myths.
No, he was not a god.
He was not a god, but no. he
was punished by the gods.
He was punished by the gods because he fell in love with his own reflection.
Well, that was the punishment.
Yeah, was that what it was?
Yes, they turned him into that. Yes.
Oh, so he's sitting there looking in the river, and he falls in love with his own reflection. And then he gets angry or something. Or anyway, the whole idea is most people think that someone who's really narcissist is really kind of in love with themselves and always looking in the mirror and that kind of thing. And that's not necessarily all a narcissistic person is. And what you pulled it up there, what is it?
It's Greek. It is the Greek. He was the son of the river god Cephissus and the nymph Liarope. He was proud in that he disdained those who loved him. A nemesis noticed this behavior and attracted Narcissus to a pool where he saw his own reflection in the water and fell in love with it, not realizing it was merely an image. Unable to leave the beauty of his reflection, Narcissus drowned.
Well, there you go. So most people think that narcissists are people who are kind of always about their appearance. And that's not necessarily the case. But narcissistic personality disorder is actually in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual as a personality disorder, which is in the realm of mental illness. It's not really a mental illness, as we spoke about in the first segment, that you can actually take a pill for or really get therapy for. If personality disorders across the board, whether it's borderline personality, a narcissistic personality, or whatever it is, personality disorders, the reason they're so difficult is because it's ingrained in how you think. You can't take a pill to change how you think. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that makes narcissism so difficult to deal with is almost the way the person thinks makes it almost impossible to do therapy with them. Because anytime...
Well, it's impossible for them to even recognize they have it.
Right. Exactly. And so, because in order to change something, you have to realize that there's something that's not working for you. And they can't even see that it's not working for them because they're so narcissistic and wrapped up in, I'm always right. But how dare you tell me I'm wrong? I'm always right. So they don't see there's anything to change. So why would I go to therapy and try to change something? So knowing that... So let's just talk a little bit about, you know, what, again, kind of like a personality disorder it is. And it says personalities that are diagnosed with this disorder, they're characterized by exaggerated feelings of importance. They just kind of think that they're like the center of the universe. They have this exaggerated sense of entitlement, and they'll demonstrate grandiosity in their beliefs and in their behaviors. And they're also going to have a strong need for admiration. But they're going to lack empathy for other people. They're not going to be able to have empathy or be able to connect with somebody else emotionally because you're just a bug. Your feelings don't mean anything. Because I'm right. Mm-hmm. Your feelings don't mean anything to me. So experts, they recognize, you know, it says expect to be recognized as superior and special without ever having done anything. They're going to expect constant attention and positive reinforcement for whatever it is they do, even if what they do is completely offensive. They're going to expect to be, you know, just held up for that. So when you think about, you know, what a narcissist is, this is the kind of stuff that you're going to see from somebody who's narcissistic. And these things can be picked up pretty early on when you look at somebody, when you start dating them. I mean, now, again, a lot of people think, oh, a narcissist is going to be standing in front of the mirror all the time. Sometimes it's about physical appearance, but most of the time it's about how they view themselves. And again, there's not any medication for it, and it's pretty therapy resistant unless somebody realizes, I don't have any friends, I can't have a relationship, there's something wrong here. Which is hard for them to see. But unless somebody actually realizes there's something wrong, that's when you can do some cognitive behavioral therapy or some cognitive therapy to actually work with people. So there is therapeutic stuff that works, but the narcissist has to at least put down the guard enough to feel like there's something that needs to be changed. So if you talk about what motivates somebody as a narcissist, attention. They're going to constantly be seeking attention. They want appreciation. They want adoration. They want control. And they're entitled. They feel like, you know, they're entitled to everything. They always need to be right, and they're always going to need to be the center of attention, and they're always going to need acceptance. So if you think about that, they're always going to be kind of the person that, even if they're doing stuff for other people, it's always going to be about them. So they might be, you know, out there joining every charity and whatever, but all of that's really going to be about them. Ooh, look what I'm doing. Ooh, look how many charities I worked at.
Right,
this
it's
week.
About receiving the accolades about, afterwards. Right, oh, right. Aren't you such a wonderful person for doing all those things? That's why they do it.
That's why they do it.
To receive those. And if they don't get them, though, what happens?
Well, if they don't get it,
they probably find a new bunch of friends who will give it
yes,
to them.
Yes, and then they will start to, they will actually start to lash out at other people. So if you think about in those lines, what motivates a narcissist? And again, one of the things deeply rooted within most narcissists is this idea that they're really not good enough as who they are, just being who they are, and that they really need to impress other people. So a lot of times a narcissist will be a chameleon. They'll be whoever they need to be in the situation, which is why they're so damn charming mm-hmm. and why so many people fall in love with them, because they're so charming, because they're who everybody thinks that they should be. They're also, they think they must wear a mask. They can't really be authentic. But one of the telltale triggers or the telltale things that you will notice is that a narcissist will never admit that they're wrong, and they will always blame everybody else, no matter what happens. No matter if they wrecked the car into the pole, it was the damn pole's fault, or it was the city's fault because they put the pole in the place.
It wasn't well lit, or
yes,
the lines had faded and they couldn't follow the lines at night because it was raining, and clearly if that, yeah.
Yeah, it's always somebody else's fault. So then that begs the question, well, if these people are so obnoxious, why are they so attractive? Because if you notice on social media and in a lot of articles that I've been coming across in other magazines and things, you know, there are a lot of people out there who have gotten stung from what they think is dating, from dating a narcissist. And one of the reasons that they're so attractive, or many of the reasons, number one, what do we look for immediately in people when we want to date them? A lot of times, what do you look for?
Do they have red hair?
No. Not all of them. Some of them.
Yeah. I mean, for me, obviously, physically, they have to attract me because
So let's say this person is physically attracted to you. What are you going to look for as far as traits?
Probably a sense of humor.
Yes. Charming.
Right.
Somebody that can
charm
you.
In some way. Or, yeah, but intelligent enough to banter.
Right.
And that banter to me is a humorous exchange, you know, where you can kind of poke at each other a little bit and have fun with each other.
Oh, narcissists can do that all day long.
Sure.
Because they can play the role. Because they're charming. They also have extreme confidence because, hello, I'm the best thing
in the world. They think they are the best. And we know that confidence is attractive.
Right.
That's what all those bad boys have that everyone complains that the girls go for. No, they go for confident guys. It's just that the bad boys happen to also be confident.
But narcissism actually can present as confidence.
Sure.
It's just the way other extreme of confidence. It's not confidence. It's actually arrogance is what it actually is, but it presents as confidence. A lot of times, narcissists will present as quite successful. So if you have people out there that are kind of looking for successful people, narcissists come off as very successful. But when you dig a little deeper beneath the surface, you'll find out that success is really almost just out of their reach, or it's thwarted because they don't have the interpersonal skills to actually be successful, because everybody is put off by them eventually when they get to know them. The charm drags you in, but it's the narcissism that actually pushes you away. And again, like I said previously, they will actually be very charming, but eventually as you get to know them more, that charm is uncomfortable and it's also very inauthentic. It's not really who they are because they're kind of putting on a mask. So with all that being said, what are kind of the behaviors that you're going to look for? So some of the behaviors, I mean, this is really easy. Constant seeking of attention. Somebody who's narcissistic is always going to be seeking attention, whether it's bragging about how many charities they're doing or how many whatever. All over social media, either posting pictures of themselves or constantly posting vague book stuff. You know what I'm talking about? The vague, trying yes. to get people to comment, trying to get people to be interested in what they're doing. They'll also constantly be creating drama with other people. A lot of times you'll see that on social media. They'll put out stuff that's really controversial and then just berate anybody that disagrees with them because, well, how dare you? Because, of course, I'm right because I'm me. I'm right. They'll gaslight people. And if you don't know what gaslighting is gaslighting's kind of the idea that you, and I always think of this song. Remember that rap song, It Wasn't Me? Did you ever see that song? That song?
No.
So it's about this guy whose girlfriend catches him with another girl, and he's like, oh, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. So it's lying in an obvious way. You know, I saw you sitting right there. Of course it was you. Oh, it wasn't me. You're crazy. So getting people to believe that really maybe they're crazy when, you know, in order to get out of being caught in a lie or whatever, that's gaslighting. So they will actually gaslight you. They'll try to make you think that you're crazy. No, I wasn't cheating on you. You're just obsessive and jealous. I wasn't cheating on you. So it'll actually, and sometimes they'll actually project onto you what they were actually doing.
Mm-hmm.
They'll always blame other people when everything goes wrong. They have a complete lack of empathy and can't really understand someone else's point of view or how they think. And they will sometimes exaggerate their accomplishments. So, you know, rather than being somebody who, you know, did a Google search, they worked for Google.
Mm-hmm.
The first person that comes to mind to me, honest to God, is Al Gore, who didn't work on a policy of the internet. He helped create the internet. No, dude, you worked on a policy that had nothing to do, you know. But, I mean, it's so whatever they did, they take it to the 10th degree. It's not like fudging on your resume. It's like, you know, I didn't work for 3M. I invented Post-its kind of thing. So that's the kind of thing you need to look for. You can see this kind of stuff in the first few dates, if you're really looking.
So it's like, you know, I worked for NASA. Well, really, you worked for the food service that supplied the cafeteria at NASA. And yes, so you were at NASA and you were working there, but your working was not like you weren't.
You weren't a NASA.
Right. Saying that I worked at NASA is going to suggest that in some way you were an engineer, or, I mean, we all probably know that you're not an astronaut, but in some big, highly technical, ooh, wow, super impressive, where. No, maybe you might have been, you know, sweeping the floors or something like that.
Yes, yes. And that's the kind of thing. So if you actually go out on a date with somebody, again, some of the stuff you can look for, are they creating drama? Are they trying to appear more than they really are? How do they talk about their ex? Are they blaming their ex for everything and calling their ex crazy and whatever? And you know, if somebody's doing that, you might want it. It's a red flag, you know. If they can't take any responsibility whatsoever for any of their relationships, something to look at. So, again, pay attention to people that are constantly seeking attention, gaslighting, never admitting mistakes, blaming everybody else for what goes wrong, blaming the boss for when they lost their job, not really having much empathy, and exaggerating the accomplishments. So, there you go. So, look for that kind of stuff. And if you see it, you might want to run. Because this person's probably going to be a narcissist. So with that, we're going to have to take a quick little break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about relationship rescue. So don't go away. You are listening to
Mod Love. This is Stephen Cardinal of Mod Love, and if you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to head out to iTunes and leave us a review. Doing so will really help us reach more people and touch more lives. And if you're not an iTunes user, even a review on our Facebook page will go a long way in showing your support. Thanks a lot, and thanks for listening to Mod Love.
Welcome back. This is the third segment of Mod Love, and this is Jody Riley with my co-host,
Stephen Cardinal.
And thank you so much for staying with us for the entire hour tonight. And if you're just joining us, we're talking a little bit about relationship rescues. And I found this fantastic article in Psychology Today on five things that you can do to save your relationship. And I know we talk a lot about dating on the show, but I think it's important to also talk about people that are already in relationships.
Absolutely. We are talking, that's what we're here for, is to talk relationships. Right. It's not just how to get them, but how to maintain them.
Stay in them, how to maintain them. So one of the first things, and I can't actually see that article, so if you could pull it up there.
It's up. Where do you want it? You want to see that?
Yeah, go ahead and start with the first one, because you can probably read it.
So we're talking about five things that we can do today to save your relationship. So when relationships start to decline, it tends to be slowly, and we don't really notice it till a lot later. So how can we recognize the things that we're doing, or what can we do to prevent that decline and start bringing things back to where they're healthy again? So number one is express love in a way your partner would experience as loving.
And this kind of goes along with love languages.
That was my thought when I looked at that as well. So if you know that the person in your life that you love really loves tokens of affection, so physical gifts, if you haven't bought her flowers in a while or something like that, do that, because you know that's what she will recognize as symbols of your love. Don't pay her compliments when you know that, no, she likes to receive a simple little thing, whether it be a I love you card or, some flowers or something like that. It doesn't have to be, obviously, you know the person in your life. Maybe you are at that point.
And if you don't know, you need to find that out.
Exactly. You know, maybe that first thing you should do is grab the book, Five Love Languages, sit down with your loved one and kind of go through it together and make sure that you're on the same page. And I don't know if those ever change as your life goes on.
You know, I was just thinking that as you were saying it. That'd be a fantastic question to ask Dr. Chapman. Right. You know, do those change? And I think as we get older and whatever, I think sometimes they could possibly change. I don't, you know, but I think the top one or two probably pretty much stay the same. But I think it would be
easy. There might
be
some variations
there.
But
check in.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, if you're familiar with it, but you haven't talked about it in 10 years or so, sit down again, say, and maybe take the test with each other again and kind of get a feel for, because you may not realize yourself that, now that I actually focus on this, I'm not as big on the gifts anymore, because I don't know, maybe we've bought so much stuff for each other. It's like, I don't want to have to dust anything else in this place. Don't give me any more gifts. Let's go out to dinner. Right. So, and there could be other things. So it never hurts to kind of go through that again.
Yeah. The second one there is about affection, being affectionate. And that's something that you and I are very big on. You know, both of us, it's not necessarily our top low language, but both of us are very physically affectionate. We're constantly touching each other. With the PDA, I think we probably make people sick.
Right. But you know, okay. Whether it be holding hands or just kind of snuggling up on the couch or, you know, kissing or whatever, we touch each other often. Some, you know, just walking by each other in the house, you just kind of rub your hand across the person's back just to, you know, touch with them and
or mess up their hair when they're waiting to do an audition.
Exactly.
Just saying.
Like tonight.
But it might happen on occasion. I don't know. I mean, you know, that happens.
But yeah, whatever that is, that affectionate nature, go back to doing it. If you haven't been doing it, start going back to it again.
Because that can be something that gets left out, you know, after you've been together for a while. I mean, even today, I felt horrible because I walked in and immediately went to take my sinus meds. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't even kiss Steve. So I put my sinus medication down and went and kissed you.
And then you went and did your
sinus meds. And then I went and did my sinus medication.
And maybe just, maybe you haven't hugged in a while. I mean, hugging, we know that, you know, they've done monitoring and stuff and they can see magnetic exchanges and all this other stuff that just hugging people, you know, whether it be you're hugging your spouse or your mom or your kids or whatever, hugging does wonderful things for us,
right?
Chemically and emotionally and all this other stuff. And if you haven't been doing it a while, just give each other a hug for a little bit. Just kind of hold each other for a little while. Just again, be affectionate. And sometimes it's our chemical balance, I think, can go off and that can throw our emotions off, and trying to do battle with that by, again, being more affectionate and hugging each other can let the chemicals do what they're supposed to do for our mental and emotional health.
And what is that third one there?
Slow down.
Yeah. I mean, if you're especially parents, I think, when they've got they got kids, they're running here, they're running there. Maybe if your spouses are living together and one or both of you travels a lot, maybe taking a little bit of time out and just slowing down. Slow everything down.
Yeah, and that doesn't necessarily just mean sitting on the couch and ignoring each other and zoning into the TV, but do slow down and try to reconnect in some other way. So, it could be just
get a sitter for the children.
Or, go for a walk in the neighborhood or something like that if you have in a neighborhood that you can actually walk in.
Get a sitter for the kids and just maybe just go sit on a park bench and have a conversation.
Mm-hmm. I mean, depending on the age of the kids, you can probably have them with them and still reconnect with each other.
Right. Take them to the park.
You just have to do that with some effort. Try something old. So as relationship advances, it comes too easy to make excuses for not making time for each other. So start looking at those things, I think, that you used to do. So if you used to dance when you were
that's a great idea.
Early on in your couple, go out and dance again.
Take a dance class.
Just those things that we always used to do and then kind of let go off. If we used to go for walks when we first started dating, like I said, go for a walk in the neighborhood. Go do that again. It doesn't take a heck of a lot of time. Just go and do it. Some of those things mm-hmm. and kind of remember this time we did this walk last time and that cat ran across the street and he came over and we rubbed his belly. Just those little things to kind of reconnect and remind yourselves of
it was to just go do stuff.
And last one is try something new.
Yeah. Now you and I, and when I read this, I immediately thought when you and I took a hooky day one day last year and we did the kayaking. We took a little kayak tour and it was kind of funny because we took the homewrecker kayak?
Right, the marriage wrecker kayak. Or something like that.
Yeah, the double kayak. And I still don't understand. I mean, neither one of us wanted to kill each other after, but, I was paddling. I wasn't just sitting there expecting you to paddle me. And I don't think you hit me or I hit you. Nope. I mean, it was fine. I thought it was kind of fun doing it together.
Yeah, we did have a good time.
Yeah, we had a really good time. But maybe go out and do something. Maybe join a meetup together. There are tons of meetups. I know we talk about meetup all the time. Again, really, meetup.com, call us. But join a meetup as a couple. There are tons of meetups out there, couples looking for other couples to hang out with.
Right.
And because you can get a little isolated sometimes once you've had kids and, both of our neighbors on either side have babies and you can get a little isolated.
Yeah, find a couple to have game night or something, whether it be go play some Yahtzee or, again, we're talking about doing those old things. What were those games that you loved playing as a kid? Whether it be Life or Monopoly. Well, Monopoly can take a really long time because there's no it's not like Life. You just go around the board. Eventually, you're going to get to the end and you're done. Payday,
Scrabble,
the same thing.
Is good.
Scrabble. But, Risk and Monopoly may not be the ones because the people that are hosting, they probably want you to leave before you're ever
Parcheesi's
done.
Parcheesi's good.
Parcheesi's good, exactly.
Or a lot of those fun games like
And there's the trivia games and stuff like that, right? There's a lot of newer games,
Pictionary.
too, but you can reach back to those ones that were special to you when you were younger mm-hmm. and used to play games like that. And you can always do that as adults lots of ways to have fun. So anyway, there it is. 5 things to try if you're starting to get a little disconnected from one another.
There you go. And I think with that, we're going to have to get out of here because we're almost at the end of our time. So again, thank you guys so much for listening. And check back in with us next week because even though this is June, this is the first week of June, we are kicking off our third year in radio.
Right.
Yeah, Mod Love's been around for 3 years. So we're going to be doing some fun stuff here in Charleston where we are. And we would love for as many of you as possible to join us for that. We're going to be doing a fantastic event like we did last year. And we're also going to have a charity that we're going to sponsor this year. So hopefully we're going to have Miss Mackie Moore on with us pretty soon, either to do a show or at least at the event to talk about this new charity for women. Because one of the things that we have decided to support here on the show is domestic violence against women. It's kind of like we talk about
the good
side of
love. We're supporting actually stopping domestic violence against women. We're not supporting domestic violence against women.
Stopping domestic violence against women and shelters and helping get shelters and all started. So stay tuned. We're going to have a lot of fun stuff coming up this month. And we look forward to checking you guys out, or you checking us out next week. So with that being said, we're going to have to get out of here. And thanks so much for listening to
Mod Love.